Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, what do you got there?
This is the new Ping G430 Max 10K driver. It's next level, I'll tell you. It's so impressive. We all know that Ping help you play your best. I've been using them for years. I wouldn't use anything else. In fact, this new driver, it's Ping's straightest and highest moment of impact driver ever.
Holy moly. So on the course, what's that going to mean? How's it going to help golfers?
Well, to put it simply, it means people are going to be hitting longer, straighter, and they're going to absolutely crack their drives off the tee. I could talk about it all day. It's that good. But the best thing to do, if you want to check out how impressive Ping's new G430 Max 10K driver is, just book in with your local golf shop or professional to arrange a Ping club fitting, and I'll see you out there with my Ping gear.
Welcome to week 5 of the golfing year. And as always, there's action aplenty in the golfing world. And Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen, well, they're going to put it up on blocks and have a real good chinwag over it. And it's with great thanks to our friends at Ping. They'll help you play your best. You can arrange a Ping club fitting from your local golf shop or professional. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. Head in store in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane or Perth, or online at golfclearanceoutlet.com.au.
Now,
let's hook into it. The number one Australian golf podcast. This is Talk Birdie Simi.
PGA Tour, fabuleux. Qui l'eût cru pour son troisième tournoi en tant que membre à plein temps. Il écrit l'histoire du golf masculin français. T'es un champion, Mathieu. T'as un cœur énorme. T'es un grand, tout simplement.
How about that? I love hearing the commentary that's not ours in English language. It is so good.
Vive la France.
Can you speak French?
No, not at all. No, I can ask for a coffee and good morning and all that bonjour, oui, all that sort of stuff.
All that stuff. No, voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir? That's all I know. I still don't even know what it means. What does it mean? It was a good song.
What was it again?
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
No idea.
Is that Simple pour moi by Placide Boutron?
Don't know.
That's not?
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
Don't know. No, it's Lady Marmalade.
Lady Marmalade. Yeah. It was a great win, though. And I thought he was going to do like another Frenchman did on that last hole, too.
Yeah, it looked dodgy, didn't it? I mean, when he had that shot out of the rough, I thought,
Dottie Pepper.
Yeah, Dottie Pepper's down there going, it's thick as thick.
And can't see the ball.
Can't see the ball. He did well to get that ball to stop too, by the way. I don't know how that happened.
It came out nicely, we'll say that.
Well, there's been a little bit of footage. I mean, we might as well talk about it. I mean, there's been a question mark about whether he put a foot behind the ball, but I've seen the vision, and you can't really see anything.
No.
And I don't know what it shows. Yeah.
And if you're not sure what we're talking about, it's the Torrey Pines finish to the PGA Tour event on the weekend, the Farmers. Mathieu Pavon.
Yep.
Oh, I said that with a nice
accent.
Yeah,
you did. Great job. Good. You're not even drinking yet.
not yet. That's later. it's too early. But he came home unbelievably well, especially with that little missed short putt on the 17th.
Talk us through the last hole, because there'd be a lot of people who had to nick off to work or were doing something on Sunday morning. Yeah. And isn't it interesting that a couple of tournaments finish on our Sunday now because of, obviously what took place on Monday, our time.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, you've got the NFL.
Yeah, that's right.
That's exactly why they... Because I was looking at it on Friday. I thought, hang on, they've already played two rounds. That doesn't look right.
That's right.
Given the time difference. But what happened was, Pavon had a one-shot lead over Højgaard, and also the other guy was Steven Jaeger, German guy. So you got a Frenchman, a Dane, and a German guy in the last group of a PGA Tour event.
It was the most international I've ever seen the PGA Tour of America ever in any tournament, without a doubt. I mean, first full page, there might at some stages during the weekend, there was only about three American flags on it.
Mm. No, correct.
Which was kind of good.
Yeah. Interestingly, a lot of people were talking previously to this about the 10 cards that the DP World Tour gave to... the PGA Tour gave 10 cards to the DP World Tour players from last season.
That's right.
That were not already exempt.
Correct.
And Nikolai Højgaard got one of them.
Yeah.
Pavon got one of them by birdieing the last four holes of the DP World Championship the previous year, and the guy he knocked out was Rasmus Højgaard, Nikolai's brother.
Incredible. Isn't that an incredible story? And then he goes on the wins really early.
Exactly. So he's got a one-shot lead over Højgaard playing the last. Højgaard knocks it on in two. You kind of think he's going to two-putt for his birdie. Pavon pulls his tee shot left. He's up against the bunker on an upslope, and he hoiks it left. It was a terrible second shot. I'm actually going to do my masterclass on uphill lies, by the way, later on.
We can tell Kazuma Kibori can help him out, and he can help out Matty Goggin as well, because we saw a couple. On what hole was it? 16. Yeah, 16. Yes. They both had trouble with it on Saturday and Sunday.
Correct, yeah. But Pavon had trouble with it on the final hole, hoiked it into the rough. And I've been in that rough before. It is not good down there. Yeah. You've got a pond in front of the green. They've got the pin on the front left.
Yeah.
And he's got to somehow... I think as he's standing over his ball, he's probably thinking, if I make five, I'm happy. I'm going to get in the playoff. But here's one of the shots of the year. It looked like about an 8-iron in his hand.
Yeah.
Hit the middle. There's a little ridge in the middle. Funnels down to 10 feet. Rolls it in for the victory, basically, and that's when they were going absolutely nuts in France, obviously, on the commentary. The American commentators, not so much.
No.
A little quieter.
That's always the case, too. You can always, I don't know about you, but I reckon I can always hear the American commentators cheering against the European. He's, you know, this is the big time.
Yeah.
Will he be able to handle it? Yeah, that's all the commentary I do. Just on the commentary, Trevor Immelman. I never met him in my entire life. You must have at some stage. He's fast turning into my favourite commentator.
He's very good.
I rate him. I reckon he is absolutely sensational.
Yeah. Him and Finchie on the coverage together are great.
Yeah, really good. And I love the fact that they are putting international voices on the PGA Tour coverage as well. I think it's just great.
Yeah, Frank Nobilo has been a great one over there
as well. Frank's sensational. Yeah. Yeah. And then you've got a nice mix of everybody else. You know, you get the cheesy American voices, the ones following the ball on the golf course. You've got that cheesy guy who, when we go to our breaks but not their breaks, and he just gives a little wind down. He must have been doing that job for 30 years.
Yes. You mean the guy in between?
Yeah, he
says some stupid things, though.
Yeah, he's
some of the stuff he says is ridiculous.
It's not golf, what he's talking about. But
he's golf's version of a fluffer, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
Can I say that?
Well,
I just did anyway.
You
can always cut that out, can't you, Dan? So,
yeah. No, it's too late.
It's too late.
Yeah, okay.
It's too late.
But this golf course, it's bizarre. Every time they play there, they always get a quality finish.
Yeah.
And I can tell you now, Mark, it's not a good golf course.
Oh, I've played it.
It's crap.
Yeah, I played it.
It's not a good course.
I played it in April, and it was right before Tiger Woods won the US Open there. So what year was that? 2008?
Yeah.
So I saw it when I was being prepared for a US Open, and it was a joke.
No.
It was a joke.
So why is it a joke? Like, what's wrong with it?
Well, for the setup for a US Open, I mean, I never got to play in a US Open, but the setup, I was thinking, my God, I mean, they must have widened the field. They couldn't have had it that way the whole length. But my ongoing thoughts when I was there was, how good could this place be?
Yeah.
Because it's set on the most beautiful cliffs you'd ever see.
The views are incredible, and they get that drone views or blimp views going all the time during the tournament, and there's a reason for that because the views, you know, it's making it look good when you're on the golf course is actually not. And by the way, there was a cracking view on the 17th tee.
Another one.
In the third round.
It's 2 weeks in a row.
You saw this?
Yeah.
Did you see this, Dan?
No.
Two weeks in a row.
Are you about to say what I think you're
going
to say?
Yeah. There's a drone going around, just sort of going around, you know, as it does.
On the way to a break. On the way to a break.
Behind the 17th tee. The player walks down and just starts relieving himself like we saw the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, it's comical.
That is too funny.
It must have been a drone, though, because if it's the blimp, the player would have known it was there.
Of course.
The drone's too small. You can't see it.
Well, apparently there was a camera up on one of those hang gliders that whiz around. There was a bit of hang glider action. Maybe he just thought it was a hang glider.
Maybe.
I did notice, though, there was no need for any pixelation. It was no issue. In fact, they tried, but they couldn't find pixels small enough.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. But you are pumping your own tires up there, aren't you?
And the other thing that happened over the weekend was Nikolai Højgaard, runner-up to Pavon on the PGA Tour event, Rasmus Højgaard, runner-up on the European
amazing.
Tour.
It's amazing, incredible. Isn't it? It's incredible, the siblings at the moment.
Frightening.
I want to hear about the finish to the LPGA as well, because that's ridiculous.
Saw that.
Of course, Korda and Lydia Ko involved, but we'll do that in the Ping
yes.
Global results. Nick Dunlap turned professional,
yep.
And I reckon it's the smartest thing he's ever done in his life was not playing this week.
Yeah.
If he did play and miss the cut, it would have damaged the management's ability, I reckon, to get the best possible deal done. So maybe, you know, maybe 5 times 20 million, 5 times meaning 5 yeah. years, tailor-made Adidas, which is what it, all over it. But he might have just, you know, got rid of his signing bonus or something like that. You know, they're big in signing bonuses over there. So maybe that he had a $10 million signing bonus as well just thrown in. But maybe the $10 million signing bonus would have only been $5 million if he went to Torrey Pines and missed the cut.
Well, he said it was the hardest, easiest decision he's ever made. And the reason being, the easiest to turn pro because that's a no-brainer, but the hardest because he had to go back to his college and say to the guys and the cap and the coach, look, I'm turning pro. Yeah. But apparently he's still going to live there near Alabama and sort of hang out with them, then just travel out of there. Isn't that interesting? Fascinating stuff. But the thing about Torrey
was, he's always lived in Alabama, hasn't he?
I guess so, yeah. But he wants to be around the guys, and he feels as though he's letting them down because he's leaving the team, obviously, and they're one heck of a team that they have there.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. But the tournament, Torrey Pines, it wasn't an elevated event, so he didn't specifically need to go because obviously the money isn't as big as the other events. I mean, they're all big these days, as we know. So,
but now gets the pick, doesn't he?
Yeah. Now, he's fully exempt, and he's in all the signature stuff.
Till the end of 2026. So
correct.
Nice to win early. If you're out there and you want to turn professional and be a superstar, win early on the PGA Tour because your 2 years turns into all of 2024, all of 2025, and now all of 2026. So it's kind of 3 years.
Yeah.
So tell me this. If you won, let's say you won the last tournament before the FedEx Cup, if that was the tournament he won, then he's kind of done his dash, hasn't he? He might have gotten to the FedEx Cup on points with a win, plays in that, and then he's only got 2 years after that. So winning early...
You get 3 years, basically.
Yeah, get you 3 years. Yeah.
No, that's correct. Not bad.
Did you like his swing and all the swing analysis?
I saw it. Yeah. I thought, ooh. Yeah. Well, it gave me a sore back, like most of the young guys now. I mean, the tilt that they have, the upper body tilt through the ball and the hips clearing and everything. I mean, it's phenomenal, so much room, but chiropractors around the world are going cha-ching.
Yeah, and now I love talking about length, and I want to ask you about Matty Goggin too, because he said some things on the coverage on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia that I'm interested in about length. And you know, he's 49 years old. When I first met him when he came out on tour, he hit the ball a million miles. He was a bomber. But they're talking about shoulder and hip separation now as being one of the real big keys in hitting the ball a million miles. And when you slow down, you know, Rory McIlroy and Tiger when he was flying and everything else, whatever the angle differential is, so let's say, to make it easy, shoulders turn at 90 degrees at the top of the swing and hips at 45.
Yeah,
alrighty,
or
so there's
30 or whatever.
Whatever. Yeah. So I'm just going to make it easy. 90 and 45. When the hips start down before you get to the top, that 45 difference can turn into 60, 65.
Correct, yeah.
And that's where the enormous linkage is between club head speed with some players and club head speed with others. That Sargent, they measured his, and
that'd be scary.
It's a world record. Mm. Whatever he's doing, I remember reading about it, and I didn't see the numbers, but it's a world record.
Yep.
When the
more you can increase that angle in that transition, that's where they create that lag and that late speed, and that's where the power comes from, as you say.
Yeah. And Matty Goggin said something that was really interesting when Stacey interviewed him before the round. He said that he's spoken to some of the players on the seniors tour, and there were some European guys who had been helping him with speed.
Long drive guys.
Long drive guys. Mm. That's them.
Yep.
I want to know what that is.
Me too. I wonder if they're swinging those, what are they, speed sticks?
Yeah, the speed stick things.
Ropes, I've seen people do those as well.
Did you notice his practice swings on the par fives when he really wanted to kill one?
As hard as possible.
Yeah, I've never seen, yeah. I mean, I've seen kids do that, Padraig but I've Harrington, never seen a pro do that.
Padraig Harrington does that as well.
Sorry, yeah. I've seen Padraig. Yeah. You're exactly right.
So it's part of a drill. Yeah, I remember watching guys do it where they would get on the range and they'd have 10 swings as hard as they possibly could and then they'd hit a golf ball. I thought they're wearing themselves out, but apparently they're just trying to create as much speed as possible. This is just on the driving range, not on the golf course.
Yeah.
But they're sort of replicating it there with Goggy. Like he took maybe 2 swings when he really wanted to go after it as fast as he possibly could.
You could hear it in the sound effect mics. It was incredible. And you don't hear that too often on the Challenger PGA Tour of Australia with all the youngies.
Well, you certainly don't. When we play, we just kind of go, as opposed to whoosh.
Mate, we tee the ball up, we take 2 steps back, have a quick look and walk in and go. You don't hear anything. Anyway, we need to talk to him. I want to know.
Okay.
How are we going to do that? Put him on the list, Dan.
Another one.
Another one on the list.
So we actually need to talk to him about 2 things.
Okay.
7 Mile Beach and 5 Mile Beach.
Yep.
And his clubhead speed drills.
Okay.
All right.
We've got a list of about 8 people.
What is
the
list again? It's when are we
gonna
James start? Sutherland.
Cam Percy.
Percy. Goggy. Well, next week Goggy. We're going to get Gary Lisbon on promoting his new book.
Well, so, I love Gaz.
Yeah, he's great. One of the best photographers around and runs a lot of great golf days.
Yeah. Have you seen, you know how they do the pitches when someone's won a British Open, the official British Open trailer for like 1991.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
So it's the year that Baker Finch wins. Anyway, there's this character following Finchie with an Australian flag. Really long hair. Looks like a complete bogan.
That's Gaz.
It's Gary Lisbon. I reckon I watched it a lot because I love Finchie. I loved watching him shoot 29 on the front nine, and I love the way he was talking to his caddy, winning that thing. It was great. How do you like that one? Do you like that one? Yeah. You know, when it's in the air and it comes down, it goes to 6 foot. Yeah. You can just see
he knows it's pure.
Yeah. He knows it's pure. He's just showing off to his caddy. Yeah.
Tiger did that with Stevie a little bit as well.
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah. But I reckon it took me 3 goes to work out that was Gary Lisbon running around with a dirty old Australian flag like a bargain.
So he's got a new book coming out. We're going to have a chat to him next week, Nick, yeah?
Yeah, correct. Well, maybe either part of the pod or a bonus pod.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
We'll see how we go.
Out of interest on books, golf books, if you had to pick one golf book that you'd recommend to somebody to read, what would the one book? I know what yours is going to be, Mark.
I know what mine is.
And it can't be yours, Nick. Oh, you can't recommend yours. It can't be your own book.
Oh, come on.
Okay. Mark, what would you recommend?
It's an interesting question. There are three books that I loved for trying to improve your golf.
Okay, you can have 3.
Okay, but I'm going to try and work out which one to pick. But I've it's in a roundabout
way. You
want to
make this a top 5 here?
No. So Ben Hogan's 5 Fundamentals. You should just read it just for the sake of it.
Sure.
And throw some of the stuff out that doesn't make sense, and keep some of the stuff that does. Peter Thompson's book.
Very good.
Is a fabulous little book. It is a beauty.
I've got that at home. Is that Lessons for a Lifetime?
Yeah, or something like that. Beautiful.
Really good.
A beautiful common sense book, which I really like. But I also like Tiger, This Is How I Play, which is really good. This is what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
It had nothing about that. This is what I do. Mm. And he went in and just describes that. And I think that's a really good way of doing it. Because when you read Ben Hogan's book, you feel like you got to do it because it's Ben Hogan. He's telling you what to do, so that's kind of good in a way. But
I think
Tiger,
Nicholas did Golf My Way, similar. Yeah,
and that's one of the great all time books as well. And there's another book, and you'll have to help me here, folks, because I've forgotten the name.
You asked for one here, Dan.
It's a novel. It's a novel, and it's a kind of a make believe professional golfer.
Mm-hmm.
And I've forgotten the name. You might have read it
it's
before.
Not The Golfer and the Millionaire.
I don't know.
A good book. I like that one.
Yeah, there you go.
But
Someone will know.
Someone will know.
It could be 7 Days in Utopia.
Is that it? No, it's not.
That's not a book.
Anyways, it's about this guy's journey in professional golf, and it's a make-believe character. And
okay. All right.
I loved it.
It's funny you say Ben Hogan's book. I knew you'd say that one, by the way. Mm. That's what I thought you'd go to. But you've also famously said that book destroyed your career.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right, because I combined Ben Hogan's swings with Greg Norman's one-piece takeaway. It doesn't work. Why are you laughing?
Oh, I just think it's funny. Yeah. I just think it's funny. It's funny. It's your number one book, or certainly one of, but it also destroyed your career.
I won't go down the instructional route like Mark has gone, because they're all very, very good. And there are other, I mean, Harvey Penick's little red book is brilliant. I think that's great.
Steve Elkington's fantastic.
I haven't read Steve's, but I'm sure it's good. Book. Yeah, but I love The Match, which is by Mark Frost, and that's about the match that took place at Cypress Point.
Yep.
Phenomenal book. And then the other one...
Make that into a movie, The Match?
I think they were trying to. I know they recreated it with some of the tour pros. They might have Ricky Fowler and those guys out there, but it didn't really work out. But I think they want to make it into a movie. And then the other one I read years ago, which is phenomenal, it followed the PGA Tour for a season back in the 90s, A Good Walk Spoiled. That's great.
Yeah.
By Feinstein is his name.
Yeah.
Can't remember his first name. Really good. Anyway.
Can I throw one more in there?
Yeah, there you go.
Golf is not a game of perfect.
That is great.
Now that
Dr. Bob.
Dr. Bob, that is a fabulous book.
Mm. I spent a day with the doc. I don't know. I went and saw him, just to see. Yeah, basically a lot of the stuff I used to work on is very similar to what, and I've loved his books, and I thought I'll spend a day with Doc and just have
Bob
a chat.
Rotella.
Bob Rotella, sorry.
Is his name,
He's out of a golf course down in near West Palm Beach, Jupiter, called MacArthur. If you ever get down there, amazing golf course, a little private community, Nick Price designed.
Yeah.
Doc was brilliant. Loved everything he had to say, and it was basically kind of what I'd heard before, but it was a good refresher in my head. Wonderful human being, one of the nicest guys you could ever meet.
We should send a copy to Matthew Goggin.
Well, I didn't say it on the coverage, and I was dying to. I thought, no, I don't want to do it, but hey, this is a podcast. So you got a bit more free. Goggy can find the grey cloud in every silver lining, that's for sure.
So last week you guys were talking about Liv and how it's getting very, very close, and there's still a lot of stuff up in the air. Have we had some developments over the last few days? Anything going on?
Well, you've been on the website, haven't you? Because we're playing in Mayakoba this week.
I mean, starts Friday.
Starts this week. Mm-hmm. So do we know who's playing for who and what team's what and all the rest of it?
Because, we kind of got excited that Lucas Herbert had signed with Ripper.
Yeah.
I went to the website, had a look. There's only three players on the Ripper team. Lucas is not on there, so I don't know if he's signed or not.
Maybe
the other one they were talking about was Adrian Maronk. Yeah. Went on there, couldn't find him. The other one, John Rahm, can't find him on the in a team or on a website.
Their web designer's gone on holidays.
And it starts in a few days. Did they create a 13th team? Is he joining the Cliques or the Ironheads? No one knows.
Jeez.
At this stage, and when we're recording this, obviously.
Well, they'd have to know at some stage
you know what'll happen? You've got to come out the hour after we finish this.
You got to get the team shirt for John Rahm in XXL and let him get going. I mean, they've got to organise all that sort of stuff.
Well, the merchandise they could sell, I mean, leading into it, would be incredible from the get-go. But anyway, who knows?
Has he got his own team, John Rahm?
Well, that's the thing. They were talking about a Latino or a Spanish team. I mean, there was talks of Tyrrell Hatton going, maybe Grillo.
Yes.
So I'm not sure. Who knows?
I thought Scheffler was going too.
Hang on a second.
Who's this?
Scheffler. Come on.
Yeah, I thought Scheffler.
No, he's never going.
Oh, sure. Well, not. All right.
Hey, guys, it's Pete here from Brisbane. How you guys going?
Yeah, hey, Pistol. Nice to talk to you.
Hey, Pete.
Hey, g'day, Nick. How you going?
Very well, thanks, mate.
How did you know my name was Pistol?
Took a guess.
Is it genuinely your nickname, is it, Pete?
It is, mate. It used to be a pretty shit up pool player back in the day, mate. So just Pete is what they call me.
So,
pumping your tyres up there, buddy.
Just a little.
You got a question for us, Pete?
Guys, just I think you guys might have been talking about Liv.
So yeah.
I just had a question about John Rahm's team. And I hadn't heard you guys' name, but I had actually heard it through the grapevine that it was supposed to be called Legions 8. This was a couple of weeks ago. And there's nothing on the Liv website. There's no teammates that have been sort of allocated to it. I know there's still a few guys that are qualified but haven't been allocated to teams. My main question is, I'm wondering if Rahm's actually got equity in this team, is he going to want a bunch of basically nobodies to be playing for him? Or is he going to want some guys that have actually got some status in the game? Or
well, I would have wanted to pick my own team if I was John Rahm.
Yeah.
If they're paying me that sort of money and they want me to move across from the PGA Tour where I'm making lots of money, I would have thought the management would have organised John to basically pick who he wanted to play with.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, and especially the equity side of it. If he's pumping money into a team and selling merchandise or whatever, however they're supposed to make money, because it's obviously not off TV, then he's not going to sell his live gear with guys that basically, Kieran Vincent or someone like that. I've heard his name bandied about, but starts this week, this Friday, yeah. And they haven't got the full teams named.
I had a look as well. I didn't see anything on the website with Rahm. He wasn't even listed as a player. They've got his press release that he joined Liv, but
yeah.
There's no 13th team, and we don't know if he's joining the Ironheads or the Cleeks, who, you know, already there's no ownership in those. So I thought maybe they've given him ownership in one of them, and he joins those teams. A little bit the same with Lucas Herbert. You know, I looked up him to see if he was on the Ripper team, but no, nothing there.
No, and that was low-key too, yeah.
I thought they might have gone with a Spanish team name for Rahm, like the El Toros or something like that. But Legion 8, is that what you've heard, is it?
Legion's 8 is what I've heard. It's not confirmed on our website, though. I've heard that through various media outlets. But I'm not sure what the actual relevance to John Rahm is. It must be something to do with, you know, Spanish War or something like that. I'm not sure. But, yeah, but that's the name that they're bandying about.
Could be broken news from Pistol Pete. He's broken it first. Legion's 8. So if that turns out to be the name, then you are on the cutting edge of breaking news, Pete.
Hey, Pistol, what's the handicap?
It's not great at the moment. I was a member at Caboolture for a few years. I got it down to about 10.2, and now through family, wife, etc., it's basically just a couple of rounds a year, work through work. So, but I'm an avid follower of golf and podcasts, this one especially.
But if you get down to 10.2, Pistol, you're a hell of a player. Mm. Well done for that effort. Good on you.
Thanks, Marco.
Righto. See you, mate.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, guys. See ya.
Legion 8. Is that a Callaway product, Legion?
Don't know. I haven't heard of it.
All right. So, well, it's not on the website when we're doing this podcast, but you would imagine the news will probably break by the time the podcast comes out.
It probably will.
And this won't make any sense at all. Okay. Anyway, I think they'll get their ducks in a row. I think it's probably all planned. I imagine the bloke doing the website is taking a little extra holiday or broken a foot or something. He just hadn't been able to get it done.
They'll get it done this week. It starts this weekend. It's going to be up sometime this week, and all will become clear.
And the other thing I heard they're doing is they're playing in Las Vegas on the day of the Super Bowl.
Oh, you're kidding.
Going up against them. That'll be interesting.
They're going up against the Super Bowl.
Yes, indeed.
So, well, that's pushing what uphill.
I know. If they're looking for more eyeballs, it's not going to happen on that day.
By the way, I'm really, really happy that two tournaments have made way for the NFL. Yeah, this week finishing on a Saturday in America and also finishing on a Saturday at Phoenix. Fantastic. Yes. Yeah, they used to finish early at Phoenix so they could watch the Super Bowl at nighttime, but they've just said, stuff it. We can't compete. All the players want to go home and sit back and watch the Super Bowl. It'd be like our grand finals here. Yeah. You know, the NRL and the AFL grand final. You just want to sit down with family, with mates, go to a pub, watch it, and not have to worry. So they're just like us.
Well, Phoenix gets the biggest crowds of the year. I mean, they are incredible, and they're going to be one of the elevated events. And if they ever go to this global tour, there's talk about including them because it's such a massive event. I played there 1 year, and they had the Super Bowl on in Phoenix while the tournament was going on. So I played on the Sunday, and wasn't that many people in the crowd, obviously, because they had the Super Bowl going on that afternoon or that evening.
Yeah, and just for a scope, 600,000?
Oh, at least.
Was pretty much goes through the gates every single year to a golf tournament.
Yeah.
That's including Pro-Am Day. I think Pro-Am Day is a big day. It's like 70 or 80,000.
And about 400,000 of them are drunk college students.
Yeah, that's right. It's a frat party.
Yeah.
It's just one big frat party.
They have a place there called the Bird's Nest or something like that. And, that's an interesting place at night, I believe.
Hey, they were talking about Lowry. I saw it just, and I want to ask you, the Grand Slam of holes in one. So, Lowry so far has got 16.
Really?
At Augusta. He's got the island hole at...
Oh, I see where you're going with this.
He's got the island hole. He's holding Sawgrass. One there at Sawgrass.
Yeah.
I reckon...
You got to have, St. Andrews in there or...?
Well, I reckon... No, I'm just talking the best par threes, the most perfect four par threes in the world to have the Grand Slam on. So I would say, is it seven or is it six at Pebble Beach, the little one down the hill?
Yeah, seven. Mm-hmm.
Right, so there's,
that makes sense.
There's three, and I'm going to throw Phoenix in there.
16. Yep.
So I reckon if some player can do that, then they've got a lifetime Grand Slam, the ace Grand Slam of golf.
Yeah, I like that. We should send that out to our listeners. What do you think the four best par threes to have holes in one would be.
Yeah, okay.
In the world. Yeah. And they're probably going to say exactly what you said.
Yeah. What are your top four? I've got a reasonable top four of par threes where I've had my holes in one.
See, I changed mine to 12 at Augusta rather than 16 because 12 is a left-hander's hole.
Yeah, that's right.
Much easier.
Yeah.
Sawgrass I like. I've never hit in the water at Sawgrass.
That's a mighty
on 17. So I think that deserves something.
Mate, on your tombstone, you've got two things now. You've never hit in the water on 17 and you beat Tiger Woods twice in match play.
Yeah. No, I like that. What else do we got?
Now, what are your best holes? So I've holed in one at 10 at Kingston Heath.
Yep.
7th West at Royal Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
I've holed in one on... did I say 15 Kingston Heath as well?
So I've you really?
Yeah, those that one. And back in the old days when Yarra Yarra was the first hole was the long par three, I knocked that one in too.
Wow.
So there's my best four holes where some of my holes in ones are anyway. Oh,
well, I've only had three holes in one, so in tournaments. One was at Pebble.
Yeah.
Wasn't at seven.
What hole was it though?
It was on the 12th.
Well, that was a good hole.
I know. I wasn't even going for the flag. I was just trying to get it on the green.
Yeah, I was
going
to say, you get on the green, you do cartwheels all the way down to the green.
And I also had one at Torrey Pines.
Which one at Torrey?
But it was on the north course.
What's that north course like?
Actually, was it the south? No, it might have been the south. I think the third hole. Is that a par three? Third or the fourth? I can't remember. It's downhill. And
I know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know whether it's the third or the fourth, though. Yeah.
You've had a few, but neither of us had as many holes in one as Donald Trump. So
that's right. True.
Let's get real here.
That's
come on.
Right. He's had 52.
What's he up to now?
52.
I don't know. Probably 50.
Do you think the Secret Service go ahead? You know, when it's a blind par three, and they grab his ball out of the bush or out of the bunker and just pop it in the hole. Oh, Mr. President!
I gotta say, he had got a bad swing. For a 7-year-old.
Yeah,
it's inside, it's around.
It's effective, I'll say that.
I looked over your shoulder before, Marco, just before the pod, and you were scrolling down some very, very interesting top five. I'm not going to say what it is, but all I will say, it's a very, very interesting top five.
I'll say what it is.
Okay.
My top five dodgy incidents in golf.
Okay.
And this, I'm not saying that Par Von was dodgy.
Well, if you haven't got
he's not in
there.
My top five, but... it was pushed that it was a dodgy sort of foot pushing spot.
Yeah, I saw it and it didn't look too bad.
Doesn't look bad to me either. I'm with you. But it made me think of the most dodgy things that I've ever seen in golf. And that's my top five. And I'll see you on the 10th tee.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Now, if you haven't checked out the Golf Clearance Outlet, then you, I can guarantee you this, are missing out. And if you have, well, you know what we're talking about. Great time to drop in because with all the new equipment released in January, good old Sam at the Golf Clearance Outlet is licking his lips because the stores are chock full of 2023 branded clearance product. And you know that was a hell of a year for golf equipment, Nick.
You're spot on there, Mark. There's heaps of gear for righties, of course, but as you know, I am a lefty, so there's a heap of gear for lefties as well, and plenty for both men and women. And if you're after a great Prezi idea, you can get gift cards in-store or online.
So if you're looking for great golf gear and great prices, the Golf Clearance Outlet needs to be in your plans to go and check it out. See the team in-store at Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane and Perth, or online, golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. It's that simple, Nick.
Can't wait.
Hang on, Nick. I thought you were righty putting now.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Hey, Nick, I know you've heard of the Watch My Numbers app. It is brand new, and it is going to dominate the golf app scene for a long, long time. If you want to improve your game, you need to know the areas you're doing well in and where you need to improve, and this app will tell you exactly that, Nick.
Yeah, you're spot on, Mark. It's the most powerful database golf app in the world, and it helps analyze and improve your game like never before because it uses real-time data from your rounds and highlights the areas of your game that you want to look at.
You get actionable and usable info in minutes, not hours. That's really important. It's easy to use. You can set up your profile very quickly. I've done mine. And start accessing data and subscriber-only content straight away.
Hmm. Who's it aimed at?
Well, it's aimed at people who want to improve their game. It's for all levels of every golfer out there, particularly powerful if you're a mid to low handicapper, but it's great for the elite level and pros as well.
So elite and pros as well, I like that.
Watch my numbers, download it from the App Store and turn your bogeys in the birdies.
If you're enjoying the podcast, make sure to subscribe and never miss an episode. And maybe share it with a friend. Now back to Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. This is Talk Birdie to Me.
So a big thank you to Ping once again. A lot of Ping players in the news this week, it's fair to say, Nicholas.
There are always Ping players.
Ashley Lau, who shot the 61 at Rosebud on Saturday, is a Ping player. The stacks of them. They're all over the place. So a big thank you to Ping. We'll get to the Ping Global results very soon. And also a very big thank you to the Golf Clearance Outlet. Sam Colosimo is looking after us like you wouldn't believe, and we want to look after him, and we want you to go and buy some of the best gloves you've ever seen for $13 each. Three gloves for $39, and they'll send them straight to your house. You might as well get six of them if I was you, and they're very good, Dan.
Did I see a video of you in the Golf Clearance Outlet on Facebook today flogging off some gear?
Yes. I'm going back in there soon to do it again.
Oh, right. Okay.
I like going down there.
Yeah, that's a good place.
There's some really good stuff down there, and it's been serious. All the big brands, you wouldn't believe. Drivers, like you wouldn't believe. They're only one generation old, and the deals are unbelievable.
This top five you've been talking up?
Yes. So my top five this week is on the most dodgy things that I've seen in professional golf.
Top five.
At number five, and I cannot believe this is at number five, because this is an all-timer. This is one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen.
Okay.
And it involves winning a major. The Open Championship.
Oh.
Gary Player.
Oh.
Has hit it through the green, and his ball is 1 foot from a wall. There's a crowd upstairs in the spike bar, and he's got down there, and there's gravel all over the place. He puts his putter behind the ball. He sweeps all the gravel away and then instantly looks up and says, "Could you be quiet up there, please?" There was a look over there.
He's playing it left-handed too, right?
There's a left-handed sweep and then a complaint about the noise. Mm. He went on to win the British Open. That was dodgy.
I wonder what Stuart, our rules guy, say about that.
He'd be disappointed. Stewie would be very disappointed. In fact, we wouldn't mind Stewie listens every week. Stuart, we'd like some feedback on the Gary Player situation, if you don't mind. Jack Nicklaus laughs about it too, by the way. He thinks it was funny stuff.
I bet.
Funny stuff.
Who did Gary beat? Do you know?
Don't know, though. He won by quite a bit.
If it was Jack, he wouldn't be laughing.
No, he won by quite a bit. Lexi Thompson, yes. She got penalised for this. But when she marked her ball, she didn't do a dodgy thing and move it closer or anything. She just moved it to the left. It must have been a little hole or something, or an old plug mark, or just an old heel mark or something, or the ball just wouldn't sit there. She just moved it to the left.
Yeah, I remember that. She was leading the tournament at the time. Might have been the third round or something, or in the fourth, in a major too, I believe. And
that's habitual.
Got two or a four-shot penalty, yeah. I can't remember.
Yeah, that's habit stuff. I wonder if that's the first time. Anyway, that made me think that maybe that wasn't the first time Lexi done it. I'm sure she hasn't done it since. So that was a bit dodgy. This top five, it actually could have been a top seven, because the next person, I found three really dodgy things.
Well, if this person I think you're thinking of, he could have been the top five. But anyway, I'll leave it at that.
We could have easily filled this top five.
Allegedly,
Allegedly. Well, this is just dodgy stuff. I'm not saying it's wrong. It's just dodgy stuff that I've seen.
Okay.
And if Patrick Reed's name wasn't in this list, then we weren't trying hard enough, not nearly hard enough. What are you in the Bahamas? I just shake my head that he thought he'd be able to get away with that. The sand incident. The Torrey Pines number where the replay showed the ball jump into the air and move forward, not back down to the same thing, and he claimed that he had a plug ball. That's dodgy as hell. I mean, your balls, anyway.
Yep.
And also
searching for where the pitch mark was and pushing the hand down
on the ball. Dodgy. And then in Dubai, where the camera clearly showed a ball going in one palm tree and then Patrick identifying his ball in a totally different palm tree.
Had the binoculars out. Yeah, that's my ball.
Dodgy.
Anyway, that was comical.
So number three, I put it there because there was three things
so,
from Patrick Reed.
You guys gave me grief about being top sixes and sevens. This has turned into a top seven.
Yes, it has. But in the same way, it's
okay,
kind of
sure,
just,
sure.
You know, okay. I'm just lumping one bloke into three dodgy
a,
things.
B, and C.
Yeah, that's right. Number two, Tiger Woods took a drop from the pond at the front of 15. And he walked back.
At the Masters.
At the Masters. Walked back. He didn't drop it close to the pond. He decided to go back as far as he'd like. It was that rule. So he went back as far as he'd like and then took a club length to the right to improve the angle. At the time, he hit the shot and got away with it. No one picked it up. Signed for a 72, 73, whatever it was, and made the cut. Then it was brought to the attention of the people at Augusta that he had done something wrong. For 200 years of golf, if you sign an incorrect scorecard, you are disqualified. But Augusta found the way to get Tiger back on Saturday and Sunday. So this isn't about Tiger. Tiger didn't do anything wrong. He just got looked after.
Yeah.
Like no other player in the game had ever being looked after.
Well, the men at the Masters, they have their own,
right.
You know, they can do what they like. And good. I mean, I play one Masters.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if I've, anyway.
Yeah, go on.
Rain delays.
Yeah, okay.
And then we went out the next morning, finished the round, as you do, and then you had to restart in the afternoon.
Right.
But there are players all over the place, and it was a bit all congested, and we're on the range warming up, and they came along to us saying, are you ready to go? And I'm like, yeah. Okay, go to the 10th tee. I said, well, I haven't got my starting time yet. Doesn't matter. Just go.
What?
And they were saying to players along the range, are you ready? Some guys would say, no, I need 20 more minutes. Okay, you keep going.
What?
So they just sent players off in the third round of the Masters.
Not seated.
Not seated in the bottom section.
Right.
The top 20 or
they
25.
Were seated.
They were seated because that's the TV groups. But the first few groups out, they were going, no, we're just going to send you off in random order.
We just got to get
because
you out
we're
there.
Trying to finish here. We just need to get going.
Well, I don't mind that. That's thinking, thinking
on their feet.
Yeah.
So good, but they kind of make those things up as they go sometimes.
That's definitely
good
not
luck to them too.
Protocol normally.
I'd like to be invited back to Augusta at some point.
That wouldn't even happen. That wouldn't even happen in a junior event, would it?
No.
So,
probably
but,
not.
Anyway.
So just on Tiger, he didn't do anything wrong per se. He just signed the card, an incorrect card, right?
He thought he was doing the right thing.
Yeah,
he wasn't cheating in any way.
Yeah.
He just didn't follow the rules of golf in that situation.
Which happens sometimes.
It happens
all
the time.
You think you're doing the right thing, but okay.
Not Tiger's fault. But I do think Tiger should have said, no, this is the rules of golf have been this way for a long time. Thanks for the opportunity to play on Saturday and Sunday, but I'm not going to do that. That would have been nice, but he didn't do that. But I would have done it. I would like to have thought that I would have said, I'm not playing. Everyone for the last 150 years playing this game who has signed an incorrect scorecard is disqualified. And I would have liked to think in that situation I would have done the same thing.
You would have played in a heartbeat. You would have played.
But everyone's so aware of it. So I remember the story from you, Nick, from last year where you were saying you were having a bad day and your head wasn't right and you were going to sign it. You thought, hang on, I'm not sure on this. And you got your caddy to check it for you before you signed it. Because that's how worried you were.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. When you sign your card, it has to be spot on. Otherwise, the rules are there. You know what's going to happen.
And my number one.
This could be good.
This also involves Augusta.
Okay.
Guan Tin Lang. 14-year-old Chinese kid who won the Asia Pacific Amateur Championship and signed his ticket to Augusta. There were a lot of slow players that year. Lots. Playing in threes, 5-hour rounds, 5.5-hour rounds. Only one player got pinged for slow play.
Not the 14-year-old.
And they picked on the 14-year-old kid from China.
Cute.
Now, I guess I'll never play Augusta.
You don't want to go. You don't want to go to Augusta.
I'll never get my chance. But I think that was really, really dodgy to let every other pro in the field get off for their slow play. And I've heard all the stories, and I've heard the reasoning, and I've heard the rules officials tell their story why they gave this kid the two-shot penalty, and I don't believe them. It sounded like garbage to me. So I think that was dodgy too, and that's my number one dodgy thing that I've ever seen in the history of golf.
Very nice.
Right, yeah. Where are we moving to now?
Oh, just a second ago, we had a voicemail alert come through, so we should have a quick listen to that, I reckon.
Okay.
You have one new voicemail. New message.
Hi, guys. Fian Dunleavy here, caddy for a long, long time. The appointment of Lucas Herbert coming to Ripper GC and Live is a massive one. What sort of money, if any, do you think that Cam had to get him across the line? Because I would think north of 30 million to 50. Or do you think it's just a part of what Liv's money's going to be? That 4 million a week, four times, you know, you win that plus the team money. In regards to Jed Morgan, shame. Kid has massive amount of talent and will bounce back. Maybe a little early for him. Whether he wins or he doesn't, he's set his life up forever. And the other question is Wade Ormsby still Mr. Number 5 getting paid by Liv not to play? Would love to know your thoughts. Cheers, guys.
A few questions there. Wade Ormsby is, I spoke to him last week, and he's still hanging on for starts here and there. He might sneak one if he's lucky.
Oh, he's an alternate?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
He might sneak one, yeah. He might sneak that sort of thing.
It's a shame he didn't get the fourth spot in Ripper.
Yeah. But one of the questions was about Lucas and that fourth spot and what we think he would have been paid. Now, I thought we covered it off last week. I thought it would be a $5 million a year situation for Lucas. That would have been my best guess.
3-4 years, even though,
yeah, even though we all like Lucas and we think he's a young star, I'm not sure how many extra people will be tuning into a live event to see Lucas run around with the Rippers. So I think what would be fair would be, you know, $5 million a year. If you earn more prize money than that, then that's on top. But I guaranteed $5 million a year, I would have thought. I'd be staggered if it was 10. And I'm talking US dollars, not Australian dollars. Yeah. So what does that bump it up to? $7.5 million a year, say?
Something like that over, what, 3 years? So just over 20?
Yep.
Something? Yeah, 30 to 50 is too high.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably about the mark, maybe a touch more. Yep.
That's right. And Jed Morgan, I agree. I think he will bounce back. When I watch him play, and he won the Australian PGA by 1,000 shots there at one stage, didn't he? So when he did that, I thought, wow, who is this kid? And I also have fan. I also have confidence that Jed will bounce back at some stage.
I think so. Yeah, I think I've played with him before and seen his talent in action firsthand, and this kid can really play. His decision-making leaves a little bit to be desired from what I've seen. So once he gets that sorted and he has a bit more strategy, maybe a good caddy on the bag, which I'm sure he's got or had, that might help going forward as well. But the thing about pro golf is as you go along, you learn about your game and, okay, well, you hope you learn anyway. When you make big mistakes, you go, well, I'm not going to do that next time. And obviously he's been making a few mistakes last year when playing Liv, and he struggled a bit. Shame he didn't get his card back. He went to the Q school and all that. So, but he'll be back playing somewhere around the traps. And as Fian said, he's set himself up for life. Which
be interesting, be interesting world to live in too for a young pro, I reckon. I mean, can you imagine when you turn pro? I mean, I think back to my career. I had one decent summer. If I was thrown into Liv and all those big superstars and the extra curricular activities that are going on in the planes and all that kind of stuff, I reckon I would have lost my way a little bit off the course. And maybe that filtered down. That's just me personally. I don't know whether that's happened to Jed or not, but it would be a fascinating situation to find yourself in as a young lad full of potential, won a tournament, found yourself hanging out with DJ and all the rest of it, and you're trying to improve.
Love getting voicemails. If you want to leave one, talkbirdietome.com.au, and we'll play it on the show. You mentioned a second ago, Nick, about Jed having Jed's caddy. You know who also had a caddy in the weekend?
Kazuma Kobori. Yeah. He had two, actually.
Yeah. He had a kid who looked like, he's a Japanese tour player, but he had the glasses on Saturday. He looked like a K-pop member.
Ren Yonezawa.
That's right.
Good player, too.
Can you remember the name of the second caddy on Sunday?
Reese Thomas.
Good. Yeah, you're good.
Reese Thomas, who was also got his card New Zealand in Australia, pro. But didn't get a start in the field. So hopefully he got a little cut of the check, maybe.
Yep.
It'd be nice.
All right, well, play the music.
Wow.
The Ping Global results. Here we go. On the PGA Tour at Torrey Pines.
Oh, listen. You've got a...
Vive la France. Pings, by the way. Pings. Matthew Pavon. Ping player. First Frenchman to win on the PGA Tour.
That surprised me when you told me that.
I really did. I thought, surely Vandeveld or... Yeah. Actually, when you think about it, there hasn't been too many over there. Maybe way back when.
Well, that would have counted.
Who else you got? If Thomas LeBay.
If Vandeveld won, yes. that would have actually counted. Yeah.
And Thomas LeBay lost in a playoff too at the British Open, okay. So that would have counted as well.
That's right. Were there two Frenchmen in that playoff? Oh, no, there was two Australians.
No, two Aussies.
Two Aussies
who
in
were
that
they?
Steve Elkington and Stuart Appleby.
Yeah, well done. And who won?
Ernie Els.
There you go.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're good on your history. Well done. Which course?
Was it Muirfield?
It was Muirfield, yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Anyway, France's Mathieu Pavon defeated Rasmus Højgaard, as we mentioned earlier. Ryan Fox was actually making his debut as a member of the PGA Tour.
How'd he go?
He missed the cut, unfortunately, as did Jason Day, who's won around there before. That was a bit surprising. And Harrison Endicott also missed. Out of the Aussies, Aaron Baddeley tied for 37th. Minwoo Lee, I think he eagled the last hole to make the cut.
Mm.
A really good effort. He finished tied for 42nd in the end, but... Anyway, great result there.
Just when you mentioned Jason France. Day, I saw something on the coverage that sparked. So the FedEx Cup has been going for 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
Only one player has qualified all 17 years. I'll let you think about that for a second, see if you can get it.
Okay.
But there were two Aussies who had played in 16 of them.
Yep.
One was Jason Day and one was Adam Scott.
Adam Scott, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm thinking the other one would be...
The number one, who hasn't missed.
Don't tell me. I played with him.
He hasn't missed.
I'm drawing a blank. Let me just think about
that
for a
while. He's had a technique change in his putting just recently.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, he's got the shaft going up the other arm.
That's him?
Yeah, Matt Kuchar.
Matt Kuchar. Okay.
Well done. I knew I had to think about it.
Good stuff.
Drew a blank on his name. Anyway, on the LPGA Tour, that finish was unbelievable. They were playing the Drive-On Championship in Bradenton, Florida. Nellie Korda going up against Lydia Ko.
Was she four over after 16 holes, Nellie?
She was. Oh. And finished eagle birdie to Ty Ko, who finished eagle par. Now, Lydia Ko needs one more point to get into the Hall of Fame.
Oh.
Three-shot lead, two to go. She's thinking happy days.
Yeah.
And Nellie goes eagle birdie, playoff. Unbelievable finish. And then she gets her on the second playoff hole. I think Lydia three-putted. And watching Nellie play, you think, how can this girl ever lose?
Incredible. What was she doing wrong? I mean...
I think...
No birdies until...
Wasn't holding any putts. Yeah. Hit one in the water on a par three, made a double. She went bogey, double, bogey, and then finished eagle birdie. So there's consistency.
Nice.
Now, Gabby Ruffles was making her debut as an LPGA member, but unfortunately she missed the cut as well. Robin Choi was the sole Aussie there. Tied for 16th. She was actually top five going into the final round, but unfortunately shot a 77 Sunset Strip. But a good result for a first event over there. On the DP World Tour at the Ras Al Khaimah Championship.
Yeah.
Torbjørn Olesen, the Dane. Everyone's been talking about the Danish twins. Well, another Dane popped up for a six-shot win over Rasmus. He had a four-shot lead starting the day, and he was level through seven. You know how these leads get wiped?
Yeah.
He eagled eight, and Rasmus bogeyed, three-shot lead, and it was all over after that.
Oh,
so,
goodness me.
Very impressive.
His middle turnaround? His middle turnarounds were like 62 and 63 or
correct.
Something.
Yeah. Just unbelievable. Now, he was famous for an incident almost 5 years ago now.
What is it?
Where he took those dodgy sleeping pills on a plane. And he did some things on the plane that he shouldn't have.
That's right.
And he couldn't remember what happened.
That's
and a lot of the players around him were going, no, this isn't this guy that we know. And sure enough, he took some dodgy pills that someone had given to him to get him to sleep. And he just went nuts, apparently. And he couldn't remember any of it. Apparently a lovely guy. So great to see him playing well. Mm. And
got a fair
He now has an Aussie queen, which is awesome, obviously.
An Aussie queen?
Well, the Danes, you know. That's right.
Mary.
Queen Mary. Okay. Out of the Australasians, Daniel Hillier, tied for 23rd. Jason Scrivener, 47th. And Sam Jones, you know, the lefty that we saw down here. He was going really well after two rounds, but unfortunately struggled. Tied 68th, and Dave Micheluzzi missed the cut. So, you know, he's just starting his DP World Tour season. Hopefully he can get it going as we go along. Challenger PGA Tour of Australasia, obviously here down at Rosebud. We had the West WebEx Players Series Victoria, which Mark and I, we commentated on. And the Lord of the Greens, Kazuma Kibori, that's what the nickname is that we've called him.
Yep.
Thank you, Paul Munnings, up at the PGA for that name.
It was a good one.
Very good. It was a good one.
It was a good one.
Given he's a New Zealander.
We didn't speak about Ashley Lau enough in that tournament. You know, the 61, 68 to finish 14 under on the weekend to move from, I think she was the third group off on Saturday.
Incredible.
Into the second last group and play reasonably well in the back nine when she was a chance. I thought that was quite good.
Three out of the last four, I think.
Yeah.
That was an impressive effort to finish.
Yeah. Well, she played great golf.
She did. Matty Goggin, unfortunately, our buddy. We thought, you know, his ball striking tee to green should have won the golf tournament. Yeah. If he'd have putted like Kazuma, he would have won by five.
Yeah.
But he ended up finishing third. A couple of results that I kind of, well, one I missed last week because I didn't think the tour would start again. The Champions Tour, Steve Olcott won again.
I'm glad.
First event on the Champions Tour, and he goes out and wins again.
He just keeps winning, doesn't
he? He's crushing it.
He's amazing.
I'm glad you've gone back in time because we don't show Steve Elker enough respect for what he's doing. He's doing is outrageous.
And he shot back-to-back 63s, 9-under 63s to win the golf tournament.
Who did you beat, Stricker, and who else down the stretch?
Harrison Fraser. Yeah, unbelievable. The Aussies in the field that week was Mark Hensby, tied for 12th. Rod Pampling, tied for 30th. And then we had the youngest winner on the Corn Ferry Tour ever.
What?
South African Aldrich Potgieter.
How do you spell that?
Oh, do you want me to go through it?
No.
Okay. Just think of poltergeist and take out a few letters. He was 19 years, 4 months, and he's younger than, you know, who was the record before that? Was our own Jason Day.
Oh, Jason Day won.
Yeah, as a 19-year-old on the Corn Ferry Tour.
Holy dolly.
Unbelievable. So we got all these youngsters. I mean, 20-year-old Nick Dunlap, who won on the PGA Tour, 19-year-old wins.
Yep.
On the Corn Ferry Tour, and Kazuma, what's he, 22?
22.
Incredible. So anyway, that wraps up the Ping Global results.
We have got a heap of feedback, guys.
Let's go.
You ready for it?
Always.
Okay. Last week we were at Huntingdale, and it was fantastic to be there and see what they're doing with the course. We took a couple of pics when we were there, which we asked for captions on. One was, Nick, you looking forlornly at Robert Allenby.
Yes, I remember it well. Yeah. I helped his three-peat that year.
Yeah, we had a heap of comments, so I'm not going to go through them all because there's like way too many. There's a couple of really fun ones. Cam Stewart has said, yep, you got me that time, Allenby, but I got you in Hawaii.
Well, okay.
You weren't there, Nick.
I wasn't there.
You weren't there.
Adrian has said, yeah, but you didn't beat Tiger twice.
That's right.
Hey, I like that.
Not bad.
Thank you.
That's good.
Yeah, that's more like it.
The second photo was, Mark, you about to whack Colin Montgomery with a golf club.
Some people thought I was going to whack Craig Spence, but I wasn't. Colin Montgomery,
It's your favourite player.
Matt Swanee said, if I can cup my left wrist and open my stance, I reckon I can slice the haggis-eating jammy bastard's head clean off for the good of greater humanity. That's comment of the week, that one.
There's a lot of adjectives in there.
Yeah.
And this one from T.L. Armstrong. How about Marco v. Monty, a cage match, if a promoter can make it work, Vegas in summer, pay-per-view, no rules, and the winner gets the lemon jacket.
I mean.
Yeah, I'd pay to watch that.
Yeah. We had a lot of comments on Huntingdale on the course, in particular about the chat with Mike Cocking. How good was he?
He's a lovely fella.
A gentleman.
Really, really good.
And a former Victorian amateur champion.
Yeah. Mark has said, I wish the Aussie Masters could start up there again. That course is great for spectators.
Yep.
And it's going to be fantastic.
Always was. Fabulous. I used to live on the 15th tee back in the old days. My house was right there on the 15th tee. And one person after another would just jump over my gate. Like, just jumping. I'd be coming out ready to play, right? I'm coming out, I've got the bag on my shoulder, and, you know, my girlfriend with me walking out, and there's 20 people on my front lawn jumping over the gate.
Is that how the Huntingdale 7 entered the golf course?
I'm not allowed to talk about the Huntingdale 7 ever again, mate.
There's some feedback about the Huntingdale 7.
Apparently, they're going to break my thumbs if I say anything, so it's not going to happen.
Karen Harding has said, my parents were long-time and keen members of Huntingdale. I've seen the plans, and I can't wait to see them come to fruition.
I really think Huntingdale will never have looked better when it's done.
Rob Williamson said, I'm really glad that five is back to a par four, and that was what Mike was talking about.
Mm. Good caddy, Rob Williamson, and loves collecting golf clubs.
Yeah.
Loves it. And he drives trains in Melbourne.
Really?
Yeah, he's a train driver.
Ah.
Is he the one who...
Yeah, it's him. So I was waiting at Prahran Station ready to go to the footy, And the train comes in, and I hear, "Hey, Marco, get off the get out of the way." Oh, who's that?
Was this on the loudspeaker?
It's on the loudspeaker. He's warning, get off the thing. Anyway, I get on, and he came out. He came out and saw me and said, "Good night." It was well. He goes, "I'm driving the train."
Very funny. Last one on Huntingdale. This is from Greenkeeping Rooster. Great podcast. Love listening to the insights of Mike Cocking, and I'm looking forward to seeing the end product at Huntingdale. By the way, Mark, I agree with you on the lakes.
Yes, most people do. Mm. But don't worry, Mike Cocking will fix up the old mess.
We posted some videos last week, or you driving and also putting right-handed, Nick. Mm-hmm. There was about three videos.
Oh, yeah, Nick O'Hoo, you mean.
Oh, sorry, Nick O'Hoo. Yeah, that's exactly right, Nick O'Hoo. Darren Blinkensop has written in and said, "Hey, Mr. O'Hoo, who would..." He's called you, that's what he said
Mr.
here.
Mr. O'Hoo, I like it.
"Hey, Mr. O'Hoo, who would win a match between you and Cam Davis? 9 holes right-handed and the back 9 left-handed."
Oh, that would be interesting. But the way Cam Davis swings it left-handed, he's got me for sure.
He's got Nick O'Hoo covered, mate.
Oh, yeah. Give me a little bit of time. I'm practicing. I'm going to put another card in tomorrow, I think.
Are you?
Yeah.
Have you been practicing?
I don't practice right-handed, of course. I practice my putting right-handed, but that's about it.
Yeah, okay.
Now, Anthony's written in. He's pretty annoyed with you. "Are you kidding me? I achieved my lifelong goal of a GA of 18 last weekend, and this bloke lobs up in an upside-down world and casually shoots 13 over. Where do you recommend I post my Mizunos out now for sale?"
Now, if you get some pings, that might help him.
Well, definitely would. Wayne McLeod has a suggestion.
Yeah.
"How about Cobra for Kabori?"
Cobra.
A nickname.
Oh, because he's a snake. I think Lord of the Greens is the way to go.
Kazuma Boomer was a good one, but that was only for his drives.
Yeah, that's if he was the longest hitter we've ever seen. Exactly. He would have been Kabuma Kabori.
Final one. This is a question for you guys from Ben Hall. "Hey, guys, love the pod. You've spoken about the Grand Prix-style world tour a bit over recent episodes. I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on how this could work. Couple of things to consider. How many weeks per year, and are there breaks? How many events are in the US? How many events would have to be international for it to be a true world tour? The majors obviously remain majors, but 3 of the 4 in the US. Is there an opportunity for PGA championships to move internationally? The Fried Egg podcast," it's a great podcast, Fried Egg. "The Fried Egg podcast have done a full ep on this, which was really interesting, but it was very US-centric. I'd love to hear your thoughts."
Well, you're not going to hear my thoughts. You're going to hear Scotty Scheffler's brother-in-law's thoughts secondhand through me.
Okay. The source.
The source, all right? So they think there's going to be more than a dozen if it happens. So it's still an if.
Yeah.
If it happens, it'll be more than a dozen, half in America, including the three majors and some others, the really big ones,
yep.
And then around the world. All those other details that you ask about, you and I scratch our head about each time we talk about it. It would be very, very complicated. So it's fair for everybody. How do you get in? How do you drop out? Is it just done off world rankings? Mm. And, you know, 1 week before a Grand Prix event, they have a look at the world rankings again and say, well, you're in and you're out. I mean, that would be a really simplistic way of doing it if it's just solely off the world rankings and you get into every major.
Scheduling is a big issue.
Scheduling.
Especially when you go internationally.
Yeah.
You know, do you do it week 2 or 3 weeks in a row, or do you have a week on, a week off, and are you flying back and forth? I mean, around the Open Championship, you'd have to do the Irish Open and the Scottish.
Yeah, you'd have 3 in a row, I reckon.
3 in a row there. Who do you put? Where do you put them all together?
Yeah. While they're playing 3 in a row and they're the Grand Prix events, then the US Tour still goes, but it's just going to be the guys who haven't quite qualified for the Grand Prix events. So I think it's doable. If you got everybody on the same page somehow, but I guess you got to get it past a lot of people. You got to get it past Tiger. You got to get it past whoever Tiger's equivalent is on the DP World Tour. You got to get it past a lot of folks. The advisory councils, the player advisory councils on both tours.
Yeah, I think tournament wise, around that 16 number sounds about right, and maybe. You know, you'd split that in half. Maybe there's 8 in the US, including 3 majors, so you've got 5 others and then 8 internationals. And you go, okay, what are the 8 international events we'd love to have? But I think, and we've spoken about this before, is the PGA Championship should go overseas, not be an American event.
Oh, that'd be unbelievable.
Maybe just rotate it.
Yep, it's the World PGA. Yep. Goes back to America. I reckon it goes back to America every second year or something.
But exactly.
Every second year it goes back to America, but it goes America, Japan. America,
Australia.
America, yeah, and just make it work.
Yep.
Great question from Ben Hall. And if you have a question for Nick and Mark, go to the website or mention on the socials or drop us an email. There's like a myriad of ways you can contact us.
Well, it is time now for this week's Masterclass.
And this week's Masterclass is about uphill lies, because we saw a little bit of it over the golf on the weekend. We have Mathieu Pavon on the final hole where he didn't hit a great second shot. It was a pretty awkward lie, though, I must admit. He had 1 foot in the bunker and 1 foot out. Mm. But in the event, we saw at Rosebud, we had Kazuma Kibori on the par 5 16th and also Matty Goggin, where they hit these big pulls off uphill lies. And that's the first thing you got to remember is off an uphill lie, the ball will go left if you're a right-handed golfer. It will always go left. If it's a downhill lie, it's probably going to squeeze a little bit to the right. So you have to allow for that. Now, how much depends on the slope of the lie and things like that. But a lot of it is to do with the setup as well, because I find the most common thing with sloping lies is people mishit the ball. Uphill lies, they tend to chunk them a lot because the club digs because you're going slightly on the way up. So the best way to do it is I like to widen the stance a little. And then funnily enough, I'm going to lean my weight slightly into the slope, my lower half, so that I've kind of got that 50-50 balanced feel. A lot of people say, well, you've got to swing up with the slope. Well, that is true, but you do it with your shoulders. So what you do is you lean your left leg into the slope, and then you've got that nice balance, and then you tilt your shoulders back to align with the slope.
That's interesting.
Yeah, this is a different way. I thought about this a little while ago because it was in my book and things like that. I've had some different ideas when I've been thinking about all this with the books. And then what you do is you just take a swing along the line of your shoulders. So you're kind of, your lower half is leaning left, your upper body is leaning right to help you swing up with the slope. And then you're aiming further right because the ball's going to go a little bit left. It's not going to be a big swing, because you've got the wider stance and you've got all these restrictions going on. It's going to be a slightly more of a three-quarter swing, so take extra club. The other thing about uphill lies is the ball won't go as far because you're adding loft.
Yep.
So take one club, maybe even two, because you're going to make a three-quarter swing. And that way it'll be more controlled and you'll make solid contact, because it's all about the contact with sloping lies. If you hit the ball solidly, the ball will generally go around about where you want it. If you try and hit it too hard, you're going to lose your balance, you're going to pull it, you're going to chunk it, you're going to do all these different things. I'll post a video on socials. It will be in left-handed form, but Nico, who may make an appearance as well, and we might even get it in right-handed form for everyone out there.
I love that. I like what you're saying there. I mean, I've always just leant forward slightly and done the three-quarter swing, but I've never done the tilt.
Tilt back, because that gets you up with the slope. I've used to lean into it, but then I'd find I'd chunk a few as well. So if you tilt the shoulders, that just helps that little bit.
Yeah, well, in theory, that makes sense, but so does communism. So,
oh my God, what a way to finish.
Wow.
Apologies. Jeez. Have you started drinking, mate?
I'll see you guys next week.
Cheers, Mark. Cheers, Dan.
Thanks for being part of Talk Birdie to Me with Nick O'Hearn and Mark Allen. And if you want to be part of the show, drop us a message or comment on the socials. Or you can send an email or leave a voicemail at talkbirdietome.com.au. Thanks to the great team at Ping, they're the best in the business and they'll help you play your best. And the Golf Clearance Outlet. If you're after top quality at prices you won't beat, check them out. golfclearanceoutlet.com.au. Talk Birdie to Me's executive producer is Dan Bradley at Kaizen Media. Sound design, Daryl Misson at loudzebra.com.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.